All right, so tonight's shiur is actually the 33rd in the series, and by coincidence, it's my grandfather's yard site, so learn Le'ilui Nishmaso. By an even stranger coincidence, my grandfather, Allah Shalom, gave a shiur for many years in Navi on Shabbos afternoon in Young Israel Pelham Parkway in Yiddish, so I didn't quite follow it even when I visited. But it's a fitting tribute that at least we're continuing in that derech. So we'll learn Le'ilui Nishmaso Rav Ephraim Michel ben Arav Zev Nechemya Halevi, Tei Nishmaso Tzur B'Tzorachayim. All right, tonight we discuss a very interesting and complicated story. The Tanakh reveals to us human nature in all its varieties and manifestations. And nothing is omitted. Every aspect of life is contained in Tanakh. And Ein Chadosh Tachas HaShemesh, there's really nothing new either that happens in the world. We think that we create all sorts of new dynamics and situations and circumstances, when in fact it's not so. Everything's been done before, but we think it's new. And certainly the lives of the Gedolim, the great ones throughout Tanakh, were never typical or routine. On the contrary, their greatness lies in the way they dealt with the unusual circumstances in which they found themselves. And certainly it was true of David in every case that we've examined so far. And it's the case with tonight's bizarre triangle. David, his wife Michal, and her husband Palti. So how in fact did that come about? It doesn't sound like a happy domestic setting on the surface. How did it happen? So Michal we've met before. Michal was Shaul's daughter, and we encountered her first in Perek Yud Ches of Shmuel Aleph, in number one. So as the story was examined back then, David had killed Goliath and become very popular, and Shaul had become very jealous of him. So he was looking for a number of ways to get rid of David, including killing him. So the Torah, the Navi tells us that Michal, Shaul's daughter, loved David very much. And first Shaul promised his other daughter, Merav, to David, and then stabbed him in the back, basically, to antagonize him, and gave Merav in marriage to Adriel. And then Michal told her father she loved David, and Shaul accepted. And Shaul said, "Et neno lo, I'll give her to David, usihilo lemokesh, and she'll be a snare. I'll use her to entrap David, usihibo b'yad plishtim, and the plishtim will attack him." What did he devise? So we start number one. It's pasuk chav bez. Vayitzav Shaul asavadov. He commanded his servant, saying, "Dabru el David balot lemor. Speak to David secretly and tell him." I want you to be my son-in-law. And David, Shaul's servants come to David and they tell him this, and he says, "Who am I to be the son-in-law of the king?" And they say to him, "Afal pichein, this is what the king wants." Vayomer Shaul, "Koser mulu David, ein chefetz lamelech b'mohar. The king does not want any dowry in exchange for his daughter. Ki b'meyo arlos plishtim linakem b'ayvei melech. All he wants is 100 foreskins from the plishtim." So it sounds like a very cheap dowry. The catch is how you acquire the foreskins. That is not as easy as it sounds to us. So it would mean that David would have to go and kill 100 plishtim and then cut off their foreskins. So you remember we discussed this last year. What was Shaul's intent? Twofold. Either that David would die attempting to kill the plishtim from whom he would procure the foreskins, or David would die in retaliation, because the plishtim would come after him for abusing the bodies of the slain plishtim. So either way, David would be a dead man. That was Shaul's intention. Didn't work out like that. David agreed. Vayakam David vayelech uvanashav. He went with his men. Vayach baplishtim masayim ish. He killed 200 plishtim, not 100. All right? I guess it's easier to get a wedding ring, but it's more expensive. So he killed 200 plishtim. So he brought 200 arlos to Shaul, twice what was asked. And vaytelo Shaul es Michal bito lisha. Shaul gave Michal, his daughter, to David as a wife. Vayar Shaul vayedak yashemim David. So Shaul knew again, as it happens, the phrase recurs in Shmuel Aleph. Shaul saw that God was with David. Umichal bashu lahivasu. Michal's daughter loved David. And then it continues, Vayosef Shaul leorom apnei Davidod. Shaul became more and more afraid of David. Vayi Shaul oyeves David kol yamim. He became David's enemy, and that hatred, that enmity grew over the years. So in fact, David wins, marries Michal. We discussed the story already, how immediately Shaul sent his men to capture, to kidnap and kill David. Michal found out about it, told David to escape, helped him escape, and she put a figurine in the bed and told the men of Shaul that he's ill, wait till the morning, and that just gave David more time to escape. So that's what Michal did. Now fast forward to 2, which is where we left off last week. David marries Avigail, the widow of Nabal HaKarmeli. And then at the end of the perek, it says that Bes Achinoam Lokach David MeYisrael, Vatiyena Gam Shtehem Lo L'Nashim. David married Avigail, and he married also another woman, Achinoam, from Yisrael, and Gam Shtehen, both of them were his wives also. What's the ribui? Gam Shnehem? Gam means in addition to Michal. So now, in fact, David has 3 wives: Michal, Avigail, and Achinoam. If you can handle it, the more the merrier. That's what we say. What happens then? Next pasuk. Vishol Nasanes Michal Bito Eishes David Lepalti Ben Laish Asher Migalim. Shaul then intervenes. David is in hiding with Achinoam and Avigail. Shaul takes his daughter Michal and gives her to Palti Ben Laish, and ostensibly they marry. And the Radak asks the question. So now you have this threesome, this triangle: David, who's still married to Michal, who's now married somehow, some way, to Palti Ben Laish. The Radak asks the questions in 3. V'yesh l'shol, harei Michal eishes David oisa. Michal was David's wife. Ech nosno l'palti. How could Palti marry her? Kiddushin is not even tovsin, by the way, if someone's an eishes ish. The marriage is not effective, kalocha. V'ech l'kecha Palti ben Laish. V'yesh is David. How did Palti marry her? Everybody knew it. She's the princess of Israel, Shaul's daughter. So Palti knew that she was married. How did he marry her? V'im tomar ki ba'averu v'isra su adavos. Let's say, you know, things happen. Today also things happen. So they violated. It was wrong. He was wrong. Shaul was wrong. Michal were all wrong. So then the question is, eich lokcha achrei kein David? How did David remarry her? V'hinei haisa sura lo. She was forbidden to him. Kevan shenivala beratzon. Lacher, Baudashto, once she lived with Palti, while still married to David, she became forbidden, prohibited to David. And yet we see in number 4 in Shmuel Beis, after Shaul dies, he's killed in war, a civil war breaks out between the followers of Shaul and David and his followers. And Avner Ben-Ner, Shaul's chief of staff, has a falling out with Ishboshes, who's the surviving son of Shaul. They have a falling out, and Avner offers a pact to David. David agrees with one condition. says in 4, Vayishlach David Malochim el Ishboshes ben Sholemor Tanoz Ishti es Michal Asher Erastili B'mea Orlos Plishtim. Give me back my wife Michal, whom I betrothed with 100 foreskins of the Plishtim. Vayishlach Ishboshes Vayikochem im Ish. Ishboshes then sends for her, and they take her from a man, Meim Paltiel ben Laish. They take her from the home of Palti, who's now called in the Novi Paltiel. Vayelech ita isha halochu vacho achareha ad bachurim. He, Palti ben Laish, accompanies Michal crying until Bachurim. There they part. Vayomer elav Avner, lech shuv vayashov. Avner sends the Palti, go back, and Palti goes back. But until then, halochu vacho, he's crying over the loss of this woman in his life. So the questions are manifold, but the questions are the redox questions. One, how did it happen to begin with? And secondly, how did he marry her? Again, how did he take her back if she lived with Palti ben Laish? Now, who is this Michal Bas Shaul? So, she's no slouch. She was a very independent person. It's part of the mystery here, by the way. She was not the type of woman to allow herself to be used as chattel. Not that any woman is, but she was not the type. She was very strong-willed, very independent, so much so that Chazal note, number 6, she's one of the prototypical strong women. Michal Bas Kushi, Haisa Manachas Tfilin, Vlomichu Ba Chachamim. She was that great woman who in the ancient world wore Tfilin, and the Chachamim did not protest. They may have been afraid of her, but they did not protest, they did not intervene to stop her. Michal was characterized really by one trait that Rav Aviner, as a sefer on the women in Tanakh called Esh Haschil, notes in number 7. Gadluto ruchanit shel Shaul, shayom mishichmo v'mala. Shaul's described from his shoulders and up as the spiritual personality of the generation. That spiritual greatness of Rola Michal, it was transmitted to his daughter. She was a grand spiritual personality in her own right. So in fact, he says that usually a son succeeds the father in terms of his spiritual powers. Here, no. Here, Achabati Babua Nemana Shokoch Pinim Abayit. Here, Michal was the true reflection, the faithful reflection of her father's spiritual greatness, with this one catch. It's not a limitation on her spiritual greatness. On the contrary, it probably enhances it. But it's what distanced her from her father. She was selflessly committed to David. And you see, when it came down to a choice between her father and David, she chose David, which, by the way, is really what Halacha perceives the greatness of a wife. Al-Kenya, and a husband for that matter. Al-Kenya Zavish, Esaviv Esimo, Vidavak Bishto, Vilav Asarachad. That at a certain time, the parental child, the parent-child relationship takes a back seat, the secondary role, to the husband-wife relationship. So in fact, she epitomized that. And she saved David not once, but at least twice from her father. Micha and the David, that two loves we discussed, Michal v'Yonatan avu shneim et David. The Medrash says, Michal mimaletet oto min habayit v'Yonatan min hachutz. Michal saved him inside the house. Yohanan saved him from outside the house, the external threats. And together they successfully protected David. But the reality of Michal really makes it even stranger. No doubt Michal is in the middle, and her father uses her against David, but yet how did she allow this to happen? Why did Shaul give her away? And how does the incident unfold? And how does it? How do they recapture their marriage? We have to fill in the blanks, the gaps in the story, because in fact, all the Navi says is that one pasuk, Vishol Nasanas Michal Bito Eishes David Ufalti Ben Laish Hashem Yigalem. That's it. Nothing else is explained or elaborated upon in the Navi. So what happened? First of all, we have to understand also why it happened. Why Shaul did such a thing? How could he do such a thing? And how did David undo it in the end? So there are a number of possibilities, six at least, but six we'll discuss, that the Mefarshim suggest. First, look at number five. It's the Medrash Rabbah, in Bereishis Rabbah, Parsha Lamed Beis. The Pasuk says in Tehillim, Tovei Dovrei Chazov, Ish Domim Mimra, Yaseiv Hashem. That the Dovrei Chazov, people who speak falsehood, they should be destroyed. Who's that referring to? That's Midaber B'Doeg V'Achitofel. So Achitofel we'll get to, but Doeg, we discussed a few weeks ago. Doeg is the one who instigated and carried out the massacre of Nov Irakadim. So what did they do? Zehitir Gilei Royos U'Shvichus Domim. Both of them permitted sexual immorality as well as homicide. What's the case? Nachman Breder Shmuel Bar Nachmani explains as follows. Omar L'Shaul, Doeg, who was the Abbas and the head of the Sanhedrin, explained, told Shaul, when he wanted at this point to again punish David, try to kill him, harass him, etc. V'chiyesh Yishus L'David, Doeg said, is it possible that David is even able to remain married? Halo Mori B'malchusu, V'choshu B'meis. David is a rebel against the king. He's considered dead, and Mori B'malchus, the king can just execute him without any witnesses, any trial, any deliberations. He's as good as a dead man. It's Choshev K'meis. Can a dead man be married? No. V'achshov hitir konato v'asalto zitvitus. So therefore, Doeg said to him, we can undo this union. It's as if Michal is a widow because he is not alive anymore. He's not considered alive. All you have to do is make kitvitus, the zitvitus. Zitvitus is a death warrant. You sign the death warrant and David is considered dead. Ukilu umes, v'damo mutar, v'shto muteres. Based on this psak, from Doeg Hadomi, who's the head of the Sanhedrin, Amad Shaul v'nasan Michal Ishis David Alpiv l'palti ben Laish. So who is the villain in this account? Doeg Hadomi. Shaul was looking to, he was looking for this psak. Happens, by the way, people become attached to a certain psak and then go seek the Rav who will issue that psak. So Shaul liked what he heard, but it really was Doeg. On his own, Shaul would not have come to this conclusion. He may have found some other way to torment David. But this conclusion was given by Doeg. According to this, the marriage was not annulled, but simply ended, voided by punitive death. All right? It's over. And therefore, Michal is free to marry. Of course, the halacha was spurious, specious. The consequences of that, so we'll discuss. Doesn't explain that, we have to discuss, that's correct. Second approach we find in the Gemara, in number 8. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Yotes Amud Beis, those are the whole story, the whole relationship of David and Michal and Meirav, Tanya. Omer lo Rabbi Yehuda, Noshem Uriya Slomi Beis HaMelech, David married women who were fit for him. He married these two. So the Talmidim asked Rabbi Yossi, how could it be? You can't marry two sisters in their lifetime. Michal, he married, Mer was already dead. Alright? Rabbi Shimon Karcha Omer, Kidushay Tos Hoyolo B'Merav. Merav's marriage to David was not a real marriage because it was based on an error. The error being, he did not want to marry her, and as we saw the pasuk before, Shaul gave her right away to Adriel, so they were never really married. Shenemar, Tanos ishti es michal asher irasti li b'mei alos plishtim. David says to Avner, give me my wife Michal. So who's his wife? He considers Michal his wife. My Talmuda, what do you? How does the pasuk teach us anything? Amar Papa Michal ishti v'lo merav ishti. And what was the kiddush haitos? The kiddush haitos was based on the following. Shaul HaMelech had promised that the one who killed Goliath would be zocha to a number of things. Among them, the king's daughter, great wealth, v'hoyo ish asher yakenu yashrenu HaMelech osher gadol, and my daughter too. Azal katleis, David went, killed Goliath. Amar lo, so Shaul said to David, milva islach gabai. I have a debt. I'm owed you a debt. The mekadesh b'milva ain't a mekudeshes. One who marries a woman with a debt is not the kedushin is not valid. So now there's a big inyan halach that's derived from here, subject to much discussion. Let's take a brief minute to understand it. Mekadesh b'milva. So if a man marries a woman, in our context, he gives her a ring. Something of value, something of shoveh pruto, harayat mikudeshes li, bitabazo, kedas Moshe v'Yisrael. He gives us something of value, and with that, the woman agrees to relinquish certain rights that she has. She becomes forbidden to everybody else in the world and permitted to him. So Gemara Kiddushin has a host of cases. That's the typical case, that's what we find every day now. But it wasn't so common. Let's say there are other things that are of value, but not necessarily an easily quantifiable value. So the Gemara has a discussion of someone who's mekadesh a woman b'milveh, with a debt. All right. For example, Reuven and Sara. All right. Reuven wants to marry Sara. Reuven lends Sara $1,000. Sara owes Reuven the money. Reuven says to Sara, "I want to marry you, and the shoveh pruta that I will give you is the waiver of the debt. Your mikudesh asli, b'mechila zo, I'll waive this milva, which is a law, which is a debt." So that the Gemara says, "Hamekadesh b'milva ain't a mikudeshes, even though it's worth a pruta, because there's nothing in hand, so therefore it's not considered valid, ain't a mikudeshes." So in fact, David assumed that Merav was his wife because of the. In this case, who's the debt owed to? Shaul owes a debt to David. Shaul being the father of the bride, David waives the debt to the father, acquires the bride. Shaul said no. Halach is hamekadesh b'milva ain mikudeshes. No kiddushin. So therefore, Shaul took it upon himself again to stick it to David. Take Merav, give her to Adriel. Amarlei. So then he said to David, "Ibois deten loch Michal. You want? I'll give you Michal, my daughter." So David wanted her. There's something else up the ante. Now it's not just for the Osher Gadol that from Goliath, but I want the 100 foreskins. David, the good son-in-law, goes out, gets the foreskins. Ozel Isilet brings them to Shaul, nicely wrapped with a bow. Amarlei. Then he says to David says to Shaul, "Now milve upruta isloch gabai. Now there's a debt that you owe me that I will waive, as well as this pruta that I'm giving you. Pruta is something of the smallest value, so 100 foreskins ostensibly have the value of a pruta. What are they good for? I will see in a moment." So David said, the kiddushin. Well, it was a strange wedding, clearly, but David said the kiddushin is through the milva, the waiver of the loan, the waiver of the debt, rather, as well as giving the shoveh pruto, the mea arlos, to Shaul. Shaul savar, so you have machlokes and aloha between Shaul and David. Shaul savar, milva pruto, daite a milva. When there's a loan that's to be waived, and a pruta that's to be given, what is the woman considered to be of more value? Well, the waiver of the loan has more value in real terms. So therefore, her intention in kiddushin is to accept not the pruta, but the foregoing of the loan, so therefore it becomes just Mekadesh B'milva, Einim Mekudeshes. So Shaul held that they're not married, the Kiddushin was never valid. That's what he held. Whereas David held, Milvu Pruta Daitei Apruta, if there's a loan, a debt to be waived, and a pruta to be offered, so a woman wants to get married, she accepts the pruta. Look at Rashi number 9. There's milva pruta. Milva is the osher gadol. Shenis chayavti loch bishvil Goliath. The great wealth I promised you, I owe you for killing Goliath. And the pruta is the shavah kesef. That's the mea olos plishtim. So shol sovar daitei demekadesh lemekadesh b'milva d'chashiva. That the intention of the woman, she focuses on the waiver of the loan. So therefore, lav kiddushay ninu v'azal v'yavah l'palti ben layish. She could then marry to someone else. But David sovar daite apruto mishamochi kari loishti. He maintains that daite apruto, she focuses on the pruto, and therefore she's really his wife. So he could say to no es ishti es michal. Yes.
Tell me a little bit.
Not necessarily so. That's actually a machlokas achronim, where the people who have a common law relationship require a get. Alright? Big machlokas achronim. Rav Henkin actually said yes. Rav Moshe Feinstein said no. Reason being that not necessarily, but we have a chazaka, ein odom osa be'iloso be'ilas znus. A person who's living with a woman does not make his relationship with her just mere fornications. Rather, he wants to formalize it in the sense of a marriage. He doesn't want to be just a relationship of free love, but some formal construct. So if we see a man and a woman living together, the chazaka is that they're married. Because of that chazaka, Rav Henkin said, only way to undo the chazaka is through a get. See, right? Even when the couple lived together for a long time, he required a get. Rav Moshe said not. And you see, for example, chazaka is very nice, but it might fly in the face of the reality of America 2003. Where you have maybe 30-40% of couples who reside together who are not married. So you can't say chazaka ein adam osa be'ilas o bilas nus, when in fact it's quite common in America, as are other types of unions apparently, that the Gemara doesn't speak about. It's more common than we think. So chazaka doesn't exist. Chazaka might exist in a normal society which aspires to some type of virtue, but in a decadent society it doesn't. L'maisa will try, practically, if a situation arises, try to effect the get. But if we can't, we're not going to stop a person from marrying. So you had that machlokas. Now, the machlokas then, Shaul said, that's it, she's not married, there's no kiddushin, and therefore I will just take her from David and give her to Palti. Now, that's one possibility. The Gemara says we buy same another possibility. Everybody holds milva pruta daita milva, but shol sabar lo chazav lo midei. What are 100 foreskins worth? About what it sounds like, nothing. So it's not even shovet pruta. In which case there's no pruta here. V'david sabar no chazav kalbe v'shunre. You can give foreskins to dogs and cats. They'll eat it. All right, so that's one approach that it was done, and it was done through through paskening. The Shaila, Shaul said it was permitted because there was no kiddushin, and David said it was not permitted because there was no kiddushin. I'm sorry, Shaul said there was no kiddushin, therefore he could send Michal to marry Palti, and David said there was a kiddushin, so she's my wife. Yes.
Is there any problem with
We actually did, yes, the problem in mutilating the plishtim. We actually discussed that last year. We discussed the area. Why, in fact, would he make such a request, Shoal? So I refer you to the tape. I think it's 250 in the office. But because, again, the Arla for us is very significant. The Arla remove makes us into B'nai Bris, as opposed to the plishtim, who, in fact, Goliath boasted that he was an Arel. And so he was referred to as this Arel. David said to Shaul, how long will you let this Arel insult the living God of Israel? So if you're asking, is there an Isser to take off the foreskin of the enemy in battle, or generally, do we have the same problem of Nivel Hameis for a non-Jew as we do for a Jew? It could be that we don't, all right? That's why we don't object necessarily to autopsies on non-Jews as we would on Jews. Nevertheless, there is certain decorums of war that you wouldn't do that for fear that others would do it to you as well. So in ordinary sense, it wouldn't be done. It was an unusual request. Although, again, in war, both ancient and modern, it's not that uncommon. You know, you don't have to look to the Arlos of the Plishtim, the scalps of the Indians, right, in the Indian-American Wars. I don't know if you could say Indians anymore. They have another name. But the people we know as Indians, right? I'm also Native American. The people we know as Indians, so that's how they would fight. You know, Rahman al-Islam, the Syrians are known for the mutilation of the bodies of Israeli POWs. So it exists in war. But here's a specific case. When Erlich's not done, Shaul made this unusual request. There's no doubt that if the Plishtim made the possession of the Arla into something that was noble, desirable, then taking off their Arlos would be a great deterrent to their future wars against Israel. So that's part of the dynamic as well. That's one part of the Gemara, that in fact was based on a machlokas and halacha. The Gemara continues, though, discussing how Michal raised the children of her sister Merav, and the Gemara concludes, based on comparisons of psukim, Makish kidushe Merav la'adriel, kidushe Michal la'palti. Ma kidushe Michal la'palti ba'vera, af kidushe Merav la'adriel ba'vera. So the Gemara spares no bones. What Shaul did was wrong, should not have married Michal to Palti, it was ba'vera. But the question then becomes, how did David take her back? Just like Merav to Adriel was also ba'vera. All right.
What would
it be, Merav? She's an Ashish. Paskin wrong.
Because Merav belonged to David's wife.
Merav could have been David's wife also, right? But apparently that condition was never effective. But so that the Avera was different. Look at number 10. All right. The Malbim quotes a number of these opinions, and he has a different insight into Shaul's motivation, which makes it more human to us. Why did Shaul do this? Because he saw the pasuk says David now took two wives in addition to his daughter, who was David's wife, without her permission. This is like a person despising the princess, to take adversaries into the home. Most women object to a polygamous relationship, correct? Just an informal survey. Most object. So you'd have to at least... Please, discuss this after this year. You'd have to at least gain her permission. So it's not to ask her permission, it's not only an insult to her as Shaul's daughter, but it's an insult to her because she's a bas melech, being treated that way. So then David had to run, because he knew that Shaul was angry at him. But based on this, at least, his motivation doesn't seem that that unrealistic, that far-fetched, or even that hateful. Rather, his motivation simply was to preserve the honor of his daughter. Doesn't answer still how David could marry her. That we'll get back to. Before that, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Yud Tes Amud Beis, continues with a very interesting pshat, and you see Palti becomes one of the great figures in Tanakh. We noted already, when Shaul married Michal, the Navi called him Palti, and when David went to retrieve her, she was accompanied by Paltiel. How was Kael added to his name? Ksiv Palti, Ksiv Paltiel, number 11. Omer B'Yochanan Palti Shmo, his name was Palti. V'loma Nikra Shmo Paltiel, why was he called Paltiel? Shepulato Kael Min Haveiro, because God saved him from sin. Palat means a refuge, to be saved. God saved him from sin. How was he saved from sin? Me'asa, Na'atz Cherev Beino Leveino. They were in the bed. He put a sword between the their two beds, and he said, "Kol ha'osek b'dover zeh yidkar b'cherev zeh." Whoever wants to engage in relations will be stabbed by the sword. Meaning, they had a platonic relationship. They never lived together because Palti knew it was wrong, and Michal knew it was wrong. So therefore, they never consummated their pseudo-marriage, all right? And how do we know it was true? Because Shem Shomayim, God added his name to Palti's name as a verification that that's in fact what happened. In fact, the Mishpat Zov notes, you see in the Torah, when just a few weeks ago we read that Yaakov Avinu spoke about Elokei Avraham Upachad Yitzchak. Why Pachad Yitzchak, not Elokei Yitzchak? So the Torah says, Rashi there says, God is not Meshatev his name to someone who's alive. Because someone who's alive, you know, they can always sin, and then it's a Chil Hashem. After a person's dead, then God will be Meshatev his name. Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. See here, when was he called Paltiel? When she was sent away. And they could no longer sin, no longer in the framework where they could sin, because she's back with David. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu could testify, in fact, that he never sinned. Right. How does Radak say that they then lived together? What deduction can we make? Radak didn't accept the Gemara. So you're under no obligation to accept an Agadato. What's that?
So
we'll get back to that also. Why is he crying? And why, in fact, does the Navi say in 4 that she was taken, Me'im Isha, from her husband? Fayelchi Ta'isha, her husband. So for that, the Mefarshim say, Rashi says there, in fact, he treated her like a wife. In terms of, Rashi says, Megadla u'mechaviva. He raised her, he cared, he supported her, and he loved her as well. Only thing that they did not have was marital relations. Now the Gemara uses this to learn a halach of yichud. Look at number 12. Taisus and Shabbos, Daf Yud Gimel Mibbeis. Palti ben Laish, Shenat Zcher ben Oleveino, Ikul Amema Sherochot Bimeno, Hoya B'Yoseh. It's a question of the halachs of yichud. I'm sorry, not yichud, but also living in one bed with a man who is with a woman who's a nidah. How could they do it? So the Torah says not only was there a sword between them, but the bed was large enough that they weren't near each other. And hoya pasuch l'rishus harabim, they left the door open to the public domain. Shelo hoya mishum yichud, so that everybody know they weren't even misyache together, did not seclude themselves together. Or maybe Paskin, in fact, like Shaul, that they were, that David and Michal were not married, but even so it was machmir not to intrude on a relationship that David thought he had. Now Palti becomes a great figure, really a model of restraint, as you can well imagine. in our annals. So, by the way, so continue the Gemara. So someone said, why is he Isha? So Rashi said he cared for her, he supported her like a wife. What's he crying about then? When she left him to go back to David. Ala mitzvah dozlmine, he was crying because he lost the mitzvah of showing restraint. Even havlaga is a mitzvah. To restrain yourself from sin, that's also a mitzvah. Ad bachurim, how far did he accompany our ad bachurim? What's bachurim? It's a place we don't know. It's like more darshans. Shenasu shneim ke bachurim, shotamu tambiyo. The two of them were like teenagers, like people dating, who did not consummate their relationship physically. They always remained bachurim. Omer b'Yochanan, tokpo shel Yosef, anvisanuso shel Boaz. The greatness of Yosef, the strength of Yosef in fleeing from Potiphar in last week's Edra. So they weren't in bed together, and yet we say Yosef Hatzadik, he ran away from Potiphar. That's nothing compared to what Boaz did. Because the Gemara says that Boaz, Ruth climbed into his bed, and they were ready to consummate the act. The Gemara is graphic in their description, and then Boaz broke away. But Tokpo shel Boaz, this greatness of Boaz, and the sanuso shel Palti ben Laish, is nothing compared to Palti ben Laish to have temptation day after day, month after month, with this woman, who Chazal say is one of the beautiful women of the world as well. So Palti becomes this symbol of great restraint.
How long did that?
It was at least a year. At least a year. All right? The Gemara continues on Daf Chof, Amud Aleph, number 13. Omer B'Yochanan, Maidichsiv, Rabos, Banos, Asul Chayil. That's Yosef and Boaz. But Va'at Alis Al Kulono, that's Palti Ben Laish. Omar Shmuel Bar Nachman, Rabbi Yonason, Sheker Achein, Ze Yosef. Hevel Yofi, Ze Boaz. Yiras Hashem Yitisalol, Ze Palti Ben Laish. That's Palti. You know, I just thought, I was going over this yesterday, and it just triggered me. You know, Paltiel, the name stuck. Where did I see the name before? I haven't read one of Elie Wiesel's books in maybe 20 years, but one of the protagonists in his books is named Paltiel. And it just occurred to me that is what he must have meant by it. That since Paltiel is a symbol of restraint, so therefore the protagonist, the survivor who holds his complaints in, that is Paltiel. For some reason, that's the only other time I heard the name is in one of his books. I could not tell you which book it's in, but that's Paltiel. According to this, there's no sin at all. There's no kiddushin. There's no problem for David to take her back at all. Now the Ralbag says that Paltiel's actions here, inactions here, his passivity was well publicized. Everybody knew it. Yichud, doors open, people knew what was going on, so then David could take him back. The two other opinions, and that's the Radak and the Abarbanel. Yes.
If we don't know of all these measures during the time when
No, they weren't living together. Michal,
living together.
No, David was in hiding.
No, before when she helped him escape.
Yes, they lived very short time. Very short time together, right.
So then that should have been enough that they should have been destroyed, regardless of whether
the Marlos were shoved or proved there or not. Because of Ein Adam Nus. That could be. But we see, they were married. Right. That's true. Okay, let's see what the Radak says. Radak takes a different approach. Yes?
It seems that Michal and this Palti, they have passive players.
Well, Palti, yes. Palti is quite passive. That's correct. So we'll get back to that. That's right.
She's married to one guy, all of a sudden,
that's a good point. All right, we'll get back to that. We'll get back to that. Okay, what does Radak say? 14. See, he rejects all the opinions. The common denominator, whenever there's a new Mefarsh of a new generation, He rejects everything that came before us. Radak quotes the opinions, then says no. Hanochem beinai ki get nasan David lemichal. David must have divorced Michal. Ki ra'inu shesona shol ed sona shol as David. Achash nischatin imo. Ache barach the minei shol. So David saw his father-in-law hated him. He said, what do I need this for? Like women throwing themselves at me. Why do I have to be with a father who wants to kill me? The Kirel Shol ki David haya barayach, afal pisha yechoser elav lefamiz. Shol saw that David was fleeing, even though in the early stages from he kept coming back. Hichricho laseis get levito, shol teshev aguna. Shol forced him to give a get, so Michal shouldn't be an aguna. Vosakein, and that's what David did, so Shol gave her to Palti. Vim Tomer, if you'll say, if so, Imkain, also, how you little David lach zero? David couldn't take him back. Because once you divorce your wife and she marries someone else, even if they divorce, you can't take her back. It's a pasuk in the Torah, it's an open mitzvah, one of Tariyag. Nemar kilomi daito nosan zaget. He didn't do this willingly. The get. What's that? A divorcee can never marry a Kohen.
No. You can't remarry the divorcee. You can't remarry the same woman.
A man can remarry his divorcee as long as she did not marry someone else in the interim.
Anywhere.
Yeah. I know people on their third marriage. On their third marriage to each other. You can. A Kohen can't do that. But a non-Kohen can keep remarrying the same wife. They like weddings. So lo midaita nasan zeaket. He did not do this of his own volition. The get tamausa be Yisrael shlokedin pasul. A forced get amongst Jews is invalid. So therefore Michal nivala betos. So when she did live, Radak also, they're literalists. They reject the Gemara that says he was a symbol of restraint. Apparently they say men are men. This can't be. So nivala betos, when she did live with Palti, it was based on a halachic error, velo nesral David. She was therefore not prohibited to David. It's as if she was cohabited with against her will. Ki haisa swur ki get kosher. Ki ones vashkoga shav meishes ish. So therefore she's mutaris labayla. That's a basin makes. An error that basin makes in permitting a woman to remarry when her first husband is not in the picture anymore, it does not render her forbidden to her husband. Now this is actually a halacha, but a limited context. Look at 16, I quote the Ramah. It's the last case in the Ramah, Ebn Ezer, Siman Yud Zayin Sif Nun Ches. Avol on suha lihina sef. A woman is forced to marry someone else. Osha horua based in bitos v'nises alpia. Or based in rules incorrectly. And tells us she can remarry, Hedeka Anusa. She's considered to be like a rape woman, Umuteris Labaila Rishon. She's allowed to return to her first husband. Just to limit the application, so it has to be a Tos based in, meaning a halachic error, as opposed to the case, you know, tragic case, where, let's say, a wife assumes her husband dies in battle. Even for that matter, Edom come and say they saw him dead. And the basin permits her to remarry, and then they find out that he's alive, so then she's forbidden to him and to her second husband. Because that's not considered Tos Basin. Tos Basin is when they get the halacha wrong. That's Tos Basin, and that's the case here. They got the halacha wrong because it was a get Musa. I hear they got the halacha right, in a sense. It's a get Musa, it's a forced get. A forced get does not divorce a woman, but if Basin relies on that get, they're incorrect in their interpretation of halacha. And that tos, that mistaken halacha, will not render her forbidden to her husband. So in fact, she could then remarry David, even if they did live together. That's what the Radak says.
Does the Radak give an explanation
for the change of name? No, doesn't. Although, I mean, you have to say, in any event, that he's a righteous person because he willingly submits himself to David's jurisdiction. They never say that. Right. Well, Well, see, if David says Tanois Ishti, because he didn't accept the get, he was forced to do it. So that's why he didn't consider it valid. That's why he can say Ishti. Right. It happens. People can be divorced too. Just reading the Dinner Time tonight. An article in the Times said about Denny McClain. Remember Denny McClain? Last 30 game winner. So he unfortunately spent a lot of time in prison the last two decades. In 1987, his wife divorced him. After he was a month, sentenced to 7 years, 8 years, a month in jail, she wanted the divorce, and they divorced. He was sent away again a few years ago, just got out a few months ago, and went right back to her. And then he proposed to her recently, getting married again soon. So you see that, right. Just because it is a relationship that's there, so it's ishti, he may be divorced. But he still considers her his wife. So too David still considered Michal his wife as well. The Abarbanel rejects everything I've said up till now, number 15. Everything, he discounts everything, including the Gemara, that they didn't live together. He says, Divei Ruach lo Efes. It's just empty words. And he has a different pshat entirely. Well, you'll read the Barbanel on your own. It sounds like I have to go to a wedding in a few minutes. But, yeah. What? It's the first wedding. But Sato can't pick me up at 9:15, so we have 6 minutes. Barbanel says, there's one thing that the Pasuk does not say. If you go back to number two, Vishol Nasanis Michal Bito Aishis David Lupalti Ben Laish Hashem Migalim. What does the Pasuk not say? Which is a common usage in Tanakh, Ishto, correct. It doesn't say he gave Michal, David's wife, to Palti Ben Laish L'Isha. In fact, the Pasuk Aish, so the Abarbanel says that Aemes Barur, it's a little past the midway point. When Shaul saw that David took other wives, she was a young woman. So now David's with two other women. He thought maybe she would go off the derech. She'd be uncared for and would not be careful to preserve her father's honor. And certainly when she saw that her father's trying to kill her husband. So therefore, he brought her to Palti ben Laish, le'avda u'l'shamra ki'ish levito, that Palti should care for her as a daughter. As a daughter, le'osa ito be'amanus, reside with him, he would nurture her, take care of her. The idame shehaya Palti adam zakein, it seems that Palti was an old man, and he was married, he had his own children, and so Shaul put her in a house where she'd be able to thrive. Why then was he so sad when she had to leave? Because she became attached, he became attached to her, but in a parental role, not in a marital role. Why does it say Isha? So the Abarbanel says Isha there means her master, not her husband, but the one who controls her physical life. What's that? Why couldn't she go back to her father's house? Right. That is a good question. Why wouldn't Shaul just take her back? I think the point was, we'll get back to the question in a moment. Why was Shaul doing this entirely? I mean, where does this come from? Malcolm has his point that he felt for his daughter's honor, wanted to preserve her. Something else is happening here that we know already. Right. Shaul, we know, is subject to terrible mood swings. Schizophrenic at this point. Erratic in his behavior. And David recognized always that the slightest offense, real or imagined, would set him off. And that's what happened, in fact. When David married these other two women, it set him off right away. So why then did David take Michal, who was David's love? Just to torment him, that's all. Torment him. Now granted, there's ambiguity Bar Panel is, you know, that's one pshat. Even that would be hard for David to stomach. Nobody wants his wife taken away to be cared for by someone else. But to have his wife taken away to be given to another man for marriage, so that is aggravating to the point of rage. You know, a man would not be able to tolerate such a thing, and that's what he wanted to do to David, who in fact by this time had lost his whole family. Remember, his parents and brothers were killed when they went to Moab. He had nobody, and now he takes his only wife, gives it to another man. He did this only to antagonize him. More, I would suggest, he did it also to smoke him out. Because again, Shaul turned. He couldn't capture David, but he knew, he thought at least, that David would come and attempt to rescue Michal. To take her into the palace, so there's no escape. He'd be killed there, obviously. He wouldn't even attempt to rescue. But to take her to Palti's house, then he might. So that's why he found a surrogate to care for Michal in order to lure David to his death. Now, how did Michal allow this? Someone asked, Alan asked before. So if you look at Rav Aviner in 17, Michal mitgaleit b'chol shiur komata utkifuta. Michal reveals herself really in all her greatness, all her power here. Amnam hi bikaratit klapei David. She's a very critical person. The only other time she's mentioned is in the Haftarah for Shemini, when she lambastes David for dancing wildly when the Aaron comes back. So she was a very strong personality. But ikar kocha mitbatei b'kocha midotav b'chatzim shel aviyah. Her main strength is in thwarting the pressures of her father. Michal's love was so great for David that it led to her self-effacement. And that's what happened here. She knew that if she didn't listen to what her father did, so David would never return to her. She wanted to find some way to return to David, even at the expense of renouncing her freedoms, her independence. And that's exactly what she did. Avatasha Michal Einava Mazokistit. It's not a masochistic, dependent love. She's not erasing her personality. Rather, what she's doing is, in fact, demonstrating her power through the restraint, biding her time until David is able to return to her. What else happens? It's also a test for David. Why does he refuse Avner's overture? Rav Aviner asks in number 18. Why does he refuse? What are we talking about? There's a civil war raging amongst Jews. Jews are killing each other. So David is going to say, I'm not going to end the civil war unless you give me this woman back. Where does that come from? So the answer is, yes. That's a test for David. How is he going to respond to his wife taken and to the recovery of his wife when he has the ability to free her? Before, Rav Aviner writes, he's a melech, he's an adam. And adam means he's a person. He's a human being, and he has to act like a human being in saving others. An ethical person does not step on people on the way up. You know, the line is that you'll meet them on the way down, so be careful who you step on. David doesn't forget who helped him. He doesn't dismiss the individual because there's a greater societal good that is at hand. And that's really the case here. He's not going to not fight the descendants of Shaul unless he gets Michal back. And he's not going to forego Michal, dismiss her as an insignificant woman who helped him at one time, but now he's moved on to greater things. He's going to be the melech? No. That would be an insult to David. In fact, the test is similar, in a sense, to last, it was said 2 weeks ago, Yehuda and Tamar. Yehuda had the ability just to write off Tamar and say, oh, let her be killed, and I'll preserve my honor, and we'll move forward. But when he said, Sadkomi Meni, she's right, save her, so Chazal say, that's what made him worthy for Malchus, a person admitting his own guilt and saving the individual, even at his own expense. That's what made him worthy to be a king. And in a sense, the same thing here. David showed his worthiness to be a king by not abandoning Michal, despite the fact she was sent to another man, by reclaiming her and saying, I want to build my home with you, and you see she was the preferred wife, we'll discuss later her children and what happened and her own punishment at a different time. Ultimately what we have here, and of course all these things are orchestrated by the Hashgacha, it's another test for David HaMelech. David, who's yet to be the full Melech, very tragic, painful, very anguished test to see his wife with another man, but all to equip him for Malchus, all orchestrated by Providence in order to prepare David to build the royal house of Israel, where in fact individuals matter, not just society, but every person. That royal house of Israel, built with this foundation, endures forever. And that's why its re-inauguration we await daily. Achak elo b'chol yom sheyavo. Okay.